Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Open at beautiful, sunny Torrey Pines, San Diego. Visit farmersinsurance.com for tournament info or join the conversation at hashtag FIO19.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
I got in, let's see here, 18 minus 3 is 15. 15 holes, and so my golf ADD did not set in. 15 holes of golf. When I left, okay, CT Pan is our pro. He was awesome, playing with NBC Sports and former Charger and Patriot Rodney Harrison, as well as Dan Beyer. When I left, we were tied for third place. And let's just see how the crew finishes, because if they fall off a cliff, as Max Kellerman and Rob Parker thought Tom Brady would, I just want to point out, like, my plus minus would be much higher. Now, of course, if they win the damn thing, I should get actually no benefits from the victory. Yes, Ryan Music.
Doug, I am looking here at the live odds. Before you left to win the group, you guys were at plus 250. They have just been updated minus 110. Not looking good for your plus minus.
I would only tell you this, that you saw me very early in the day. As the day went on, your boy started to warm up and throw some darts.
Okay.
And throw some darts at the shamble that's taking place. The Pro-Am here at Torrey Pines, getting ready for the Farmers Insurance Open, which you can join that conversation at hashtag FIO19. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show. We'll talk some Tiger Woods. Remarkable here. His group is actually leading. That's because on some holes, you can use his score. You can't use his ball, but you can use his score. That just seems unfair. Rory McIlroy in second place, and my group was tied for third place. So those guys out, and conditions ideal. Should be pointed out also, Tiger's playing the North course, which is not the tournament course as much as the South is. The U.S. Open playing the South. That's one more difficult, more picturesque. And you can follow me at Gottlieb Show if you want to see some pictures from your boy on the course earlier today. We'll get to Tiger Woods. We'll get to some baseball stuff, where Mariano Rivera is rightfully a unanimous selection into the Hall of Fame, and the moronic, idiotic, flat-out blind argument that baseball fan is making about Mo Rivera being the first unanimous inductee into the Hall of Fame. We'll get to that. And a little bit of hoop stuff from last night and looking forward. But I still want to talk about this NFL stuff, where the whining is still coming out of the Queen City. And, like, look, this is much like when you go out with your boy and his girl dumped him, and we're working on a month later. You got to stop. We're done. I can't hear about it anymore. Saints fans, got it. Blown call. It's over. We have two teams selected to reach the Super Bowl. That's it. We have the rest of the world has collectively moved on. And what happens is, and this happens in every sport and every form of life, is you go from being someone that we feel is a victim to someone that we actually don't like, because you carry this victimhood badge across your chest. Like, got it. Blown call. We're moving on now. But the push continues to have instant replay used for judgment calls. And I warned you about something that John Elway has talked about, that Stephen Jones has talked about, and it's the constant pursuit of perfection. And look, if you're a hard-driving guy or girl, you're probably a victim of this in your own life. Sometimes you leave a really good job pursuing a great job, and it ends up being a bad job because you thought it would be something that it wasn't. Sometimes you leave a relationship. But even if you don't want to go grand scheme of things, just look at the National Football League. What has been the most discussed rule change of the last 15 years in the league? It was the catch rule, right? Why was the catch rule changed? Because we had a decent catch rule. You got to get 2 feet in bounds and possession of the football. And then we had instant replay, which could show us, wait, the ball moved. We had never heard this much discussion about something moving since that Seinfeld episode where George said it moved. But what was it? It was this pursuit of, we had a good rule. We had a good rule. 2 feet down, possession of the football. It's a catch. Make a football move. It's a catch. But we had this, well, did you have possession when you went to the ground? Did the ball move? Did the football, was it caused to move? This was like 10 years. Calvin Johnson's Detroit Lions lost a game, and they didn't fix it. And it decided who had home field advantage last year in the playoffs. The Patriots get home field. The Patriots go to the Super Bowl. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if you watched the Super Bowl last year, they basically changed the rule back on the fly. Remember? Remember Julian Edelman caught the football? Fell in the end zone, the ball moved. They changed the rule on the fly. Why? Because we search for perfection, and perfection is, while it's a worthy cause, it's not really attainable. That's it. It's not really attainable. And the more you try, the worse it gets. That actually is the parallel to golf, right? You get up there and you think about your swing plane. You think about keeping your head still and you think about, I got to hit it a little bit hard. So you swing a little bit harder. The harder you try, the more it sprays right or duck hooks to the left. But if you don't have to look at life, you don't have to look at baseball or golf or anything else. Just look at football and the catch rule. And you will realize that this idea that, wait. Now we'll have reviews for judgment calls. For judgment calls. There's a law of unintended consequences, and I can already tell you what one unintended consequence is going to be. Not only longer games and longer stoppages and harder to watch in stadium, but here's the big thing. It completely changes the two-minute drive. Penalties thrown on a two-minute drive, and all of a sudden we got to go to replay. Then there's a catch on a two-minute drive, and we can't tell if the guy caught it, and we go to the replay. The whole idea of saving timeouts and saving challenges and when can you use this challenge and how do you use it and does the first quarter, do you hold it? Like, forget all of that. Human error is part of life. It doesn't mean that I want complete human error. It's not like I want to fly an airplane without the use of radar. It's not like I don't want power steering when I'm driving my car. I have a 1970 Vita bus. It doesn't have power steering. Trust me, the 2018-2019 version is much better. But this isn't a case of life and death. This is sports. And players make mistakes, and referees make mistakes. And they can, in fact, pick up flags already if they decide as a group that they made a mistake. And guess who agrees with me? John Elway, NFL Competition Committee member. On the possibility the league would expand to include pass interference, you can't replay every pass interference. It won't work. It won't work. Stephen Jones is on the NFL's competition committee. Didn't sound like he'd be in favor of reviewing penalties. Certainly, you don't want to officiate the game from replay. I don't think at the end of the day that's a good thing for the game. I'd agree. It is not that precise a game. Close enough. And occasionally, they get it wrong. And by and large, they get it right. But the point is, this constant pursuit of perfection changes what the sport is. The sport is incredible because there's a clock, because there's two teams, because there's amount of downs, because there's math to it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's welcome in Greg Cosell from NFL Films as we're still coming down off that championship Sunday high. Let's begin, Greg, at the start of the day with the Saints and the Rams. I don't want to relitigate the call. It was a blown call. There were other blown calls. But it seemed to me that Drew Brees also didn't play particularly well. How much of that is Brees? How much of that was the Rams?
You know, I don't think Brees, quite honestly, Doug, played particularly well down the stretch of the season. I thought there was a noticeable drop-off in his play beginning, it might have been week 11 or 12. I forget exactly what week. but I thought that he was not as sharp, not as consistently accurate. I thought there were times he left throws on the field. I think that he was not quite as sharp going down the stretch.
Okay, so he wasn't quite as sharp going down the stretch, and there's lots of things we can get into, but I would point out on first down, a minute 55 to go out of the two-minute warning, shouldn't Sean Payton have taken a look at running the football on first and second down, bleeding the timeouts out of the L.A. Rams before deciding what to do on third down?
Well, now we're getting into play calls that can be debated forever. He threw what was essentially a pass that Breeze would complete 99 out of 100 times. It was such an easy throw, and he threw it into the dirt. So you're just, you know, we're debating play calls. I'm not good at that. I don't normally do that because I think that those are after the fact things, and I'm never comfortable with that. But it was a throw that we've seen. It was an easy call and an easy throw that you and I probably could have made.
Yeah, I understand it, and the NFL guys I've spoken with have said the exact same thing. I guess my thing is, you know what runs the clock 100% of the time.
And by the way, let me tell you this:
yes.
If he made a good throw, there's a good chance, because I watched the tape, that Thomas walks into the end zone, and we probably would have then said, "I love it. Peyton's aggressive, and you got to go after it in big games." So that's why I don't get into that.
Why was Todd Gurley not used him? You watched the film, so was he a decoy? Did they put two guys on him? Why was there not a ton of Todd Gurley on
Sunday? Well, he didn't play a lot of snaps, so I don't know the answer to that. Let's assume for the moment that he's hurt. He didn't play a lot of snaps. I thought the Saints did some really good things with their defensive fronts. Without getting into all the X's and O nuances of it, I thought they did some really good things to limit the Rams' run game, and it caused a problem for the Rams, because at their core, the Rams do need to run the ball. Obviously, they won this game, but in the general flow of their offense, they're not a one-dimensional team. Pretty much their offense starts tactically with the run game, and the Saints did a really good job with their defensive fronts and their strategy and tactics to take away the run game, but I have to believe that Gurley was hurt.
I thought there was a big boy drive by Jared Goff at the end of the first half, right? Like, they needed points,
yep.
And it felt like, and a lot of us have questioned Jared Goff, hey, can you, and I felt like he wasn't perfect. He wasn't the greatest quarterback, and as you pointed out, if Michael Thomas catches that ball, runs in the end zone on first down, a lot more pressure would have been on Jared Goff, but he did get them into field goal range after the field goal. But I thought end of the first half showed me that Jared Goff has some lower intestinal fortitude that had been questioned previously.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, one of those throws was to Brandon Cooks for 36 yards, and I thought that was really nice design by Sean McVay, because he understood how the Saints were playing. They were not, they didn't match up to specific receivers in this game. So the way he structured his formation, he actually got Cooks on the slot corner, Williams, and Cooks ran by him, and it was a slot fade, and Goff made a great, great throw. But Goff made, he had the second reaction improvisational play late to Everett for, I think, 39 yards. So, it was one of those games where neither offense was really consistent, and then you get down to, quote-unquote, who makes plays when they count, and that's what people look at in these games.
Greg Cosell joining us, NFL Films. He's been doing it for 39 years, doing a great job, and kind enough to spend time with us every week here on what he sees in the All-22 that we miss when we simply watch as civilians on TV. Joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here, Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get to the Chiefs. And I felt like, again, just a layman, I felt like, what a hell of a game plan the Patriots had. Let's just start with the first half before we get to all the other stuff. First half, what did you see first? Patriots offense, they get the ball first, just like they did against the Chargers, although they didn't win the toss. They get the ball, they march right down the field. What were they doing in the first half?
Well, first of all, they had, I believe, six first downs on that opening drive, and they had six different runs. So their run game over this last month or so has become as diverse and multiple, Doug, as any team in the league. And we don't think about the Patriots that way because of Tom Brady. And certainly we still don't think of them that way because of what Brady did on the winning winning drive, but they have become really multiple with their run game. They play a lot with two backs with James Devlin, which is very rare. Very few teams do that. So their run game is really kind of fun to watch.
But they kept chewing up the clock. They kept using it. Felt like
you remember
back in the days, people used to do this to Peyton Manning, but they used to try and do it to Tom Brady as well. The key to a really good defense is keep your defense off the football field. Do you think that was part of the game plan of the Patriots to keep Pat Mahomes over there on ice on the sidelines?
I'm sure it was. I mean, I think it certainly makes sense. But I think they've evolved. Look, they did the same thing versus the Chargers. They ran the ball really effectively. If I'm not mistaken, I think in the last two games, these two playoff wins, I think in the first half of the Chargers game, Sony Michel had 16 carries. And in the first half of the Chiefs game, he had 19 carries. So, yes, is there an element of, hey, let's control the ball? Sure. But I think at its core, they've also sort of evolved and morphed into a running team as a foundational element. Look, we know how good Julian Edelman is. We know that. And Gronk made a few plays. But you could make the argument that at times over this last month, it seems like the two most important players on their offense are Sony Michel and James White.
Yeah. I want to get to Sony Michel and James White and Burkhead as well, because I saw something interesting. I want to get your take on the second half. But let's get to the other side. Chiefs get the football, and
now that was sheer brilliance, by the way.
Tell me. Tell us what they did.
It was a very, I mean, when you see some of these things that Belichick does, I always think to myself, God, that's so simple and so smart. Why didn't I think of it? You know, then I feel like an idiot, but he's Belichick and I'm not. But what they basically did is they put their worst corner. It was either Jones or Crossan. They both played. They put their worst corner on Hill. And they had Devin McCourty essentially double-team him on every play. So they took Hill out with double teams. And then they had everybody else basically play zero man. There was no safety help because the safety McCourty was dedicated double on Hill. And then the other thing he did that was brilliant, he put a corner on Travis Kelce, Jackson. So instead of putting a safety, Chung, or a safety, he put a corner. And it was just, and neither Kelce nor Hill were factors in the game.
What should the Chiefs have done to adjust?
Well, there's a lot of things you probably could have done. They didn't really do much until a couple of plays in the second half. Much of what the Chiefs did offensively was done with Mahomes being second reaction and improvisational, and he's very, very good at that. It's just hard to be consistent that way, and they really weren't. You know, they didn't make, to my way of thinking, they didn't make a ton of adjustments, but they did, like I said, have a few really nice, well-designed plays to attack that man coverage in the second half.
You know, what's interesting also is Greg Cosell joining us, NFL Films, breaking down what really happened during championship weekend here in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. They also were able to get pressure on Mahomes. And you know, we heard from analyst after analyst saying, like, look, the Patriots just lack playmakers. They don't have Chandler Jones anymore. They don't have, you know, guys that you can just, you know, let them loose and they're going to get after the quarterback. What were they able to do up front to get pressure on Mahomes against what's been seen as a really good offensive line?
Well, they did a lot of stunting, different kinds of stunts, particularly working the inside stunts, and they were very, very good at it. Some of them had a delay element to it. So, you know, they were able to create pressure that way. They didn't just line up and say, hey, let's rush the quarterback. They don't have great pass rushers in that regard, so they have to scheme pressure, and they schemed it very, very well in this game. And see, when you play a ton of man like that, you can scheme pressure because you have an extra body. You have an extra body. You have five people who can rush, not just four. So it gave them that extra body, and they did some really good things.
That's great stuff. Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get to the second half. Something I noticed. I know Sony Michel ran one in the end zone, but it felt like in key situations, fourth quarter and at times in overtime, they left Burkhead in because of and White in, even though they're not as talented, because of the trust factor, right? Like, you know what? You're not Sony Michel in terms of making guys miss, but let's not have a rookie hold the ball, the chance of it getting poked out and fumbling. Is that too big a leap? Was it a matchup thing? Why do you think it felt like Burkhead was in there a lot more than Sony Michel late?
But that's a hard question to answer. You know, with Belichick, you never know the answer to that. I mean, look, Michelle has sort of been the bell cow and the workhorse. I would be hard-pressed to think it's a lack of trust. I mean, here's a guy you're basically building your offense around in the first half of every game, which means it's game plan. So, I don't know. He's been carrying the ball a lot. You know, basically, I'm speaking in a roundabout way to say right. I have no freaking clue, Doug. I can't answer that.
Here's a more fair question to ask. Okay, so, look, Tony Romo was pointing out what they were going to do based upon the coverage. We had Charlie Weiss on yesterday, and what he said was, look, any veteran quarterback can sit up there and do what Tony Romo can do. Maybe the difference is that Tom Brady can process it almost every time at the line of scrimmage, know exactly where the ball is supposed to go and how to do it. Why couldn't the Chiefs see what was coming when all of these educated offensive people seemed to be able to see what was coming and where it was going?
See what do you mean to see what was coming?
Well, I mean, like Romo's sitting there going, like, all right, Gronk's out wide. They're throwing to Gronk. And then he's, you know, I mean, the
because,
idea of.
Because, first of all, no knock on you. I mean, I think that everybody knows what the other team is going to do. What he was saying wasn't anything that was abnormal. The Patriots put Gronk outside a lot. They've done that for years and years. The Chiefs felt they have Eric Berry. You know, we don't know if he's still hurt, but when Eric Berry's healthy, Eric Berry is a top three safety in the league. You know, the Chiefs have matched up Eric Berry to Gronk many times before. So they didn't lose the game because they were out-schemed. I mean, you look down the stretch, they're a man-to-man defense. So on that final drive in overtime, they played two-man coverage with seven defensive backs on the field. That's what they play. And you know, one of them, there was confusion. That was the first one on third and 10 in coverage. The second and third were just good throws against good coverage. I mean, that's what the Chiefs play. This wasn't something that the Patriots did that people are like, oh my God, the Patriots are actually going to put Rob Gronkowski outside. They've done that 1,000 times.
But I guess, you know, Bob Sutton gets fired yesterday. And I guess my question is, you watch the tape. Was Bob Sutton responsible for Tom Brady being able to score when he had to score, or is that just Brady being better than the defense?
Well, when you win against man coverage, everybody plays man coverage in the NFL. So when you win against man coverage, and I'm just being honest here, are we ripping the coach? I mean, you know, this is what the Chiefs do. They play man. Every year, people talk about how you can't play zone against Tom Brady because he'll eat you up. Okay?
So they play man and
they play man, which, by the way, is their modus operandi, and they've played it all year. And granted, they did not have a great defense. They don't have great people, by the way, particularly on the back end. So they played man. That's what they do. And Brady made some big throws. You know, who else are you going to put on Gronk? I mean, it's easy to say after plays, well, you should double him. Well, because they don't have great people, they probably don't feel comfortable doing those kinds of things because, you know, when you do one thing, you give up something else, as you well know. So it's, like I said, this stuff's easy after the fact.
Yeah, no doubt. Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I mentioned how long you've been doing this, and I mentioned it because look, you've watched all of the best, okay? And I came into this season thinking I never see anybody who checks every box like Aaron Rodgers. Plus, he's won the big games. He's lifted up teams that weren't as good, and thinking like Aaron Rodgers is the best I've ever seen play quarterback. But I watched Brady and I realized he wasn't perfect Sunday, right? He threw two picks and could have thrown a third, and really all two of the two picks that happened were really more his fault than anybody else's. Yet at 41 years old, he's been able to get to the Super Bowl 9 times. You watched everybody play, all of the best of the modern era of football. Is he, based upon your immense amount of knowledge, the best you've seen play the position?
From a consistency standpoint, I think it's absolutely remarkable. I mean, that's ultimately what separates. We can talk about individual talents. We can talk about players that throw it better. We can talk about players that move better. I think his brilliance before the snap of the ball is something that's not talked about very much. I think his understanding of the game. I think he throws the ball better than people think. He always has. His ball has always cut through the wind in New England. And I think his accuracy over the years has been truly remarkable. and just his consistency of execution, play after play after play after play. To me, that's truly remarkable.
Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. We're still a week and a half away, but this is the type of thing that I'm sure Bill Belichick waits for and you wait for is, all right, you got the Rams. They're high-powered, kind of unique style where they look the same every play and they run all different variations of kind of the same look. What do you think Bill Belichick's going to concoct? If he was able to put his worst corner and then a safety, you know, covering the fastest guy in the NFL, what does he do against the Rams? What do you think his key is?
You're asking me to be Bill Belichick?
Yes.
That's a lot of pressure, Doug. I'm breaking out in a sweat here. You know, that's a hard thing for me to know. I will say this. The Rams have certain things that they do all the time. Okay, they're not one of those teams that is as multiple as people probably think. There's not a ton of formation variation. There's not a ton of personnel variation. Their run game is a couple of plays, although I think they're going to do a few more things in the Super Bowl just because I think they will and they need to. But they're not one of those teams that does a ton of stuff. So the biggest thing I think he's going to have to address, and he will, two things, the run game, and that's based on defensive fronts and leverage and setting the edge and those kinds of things, and the pass game versus all those what we call minus splits where the wide receivers line up close to the formation. That's a Rams staple. It's often hard to play press man against that, so you have to have an answer for that. So he'll have something that he believes strongly in. Whether it works, I guess time will tell. Don't forget, you know, we always just assume Belichick is going to be great. Last year, his defense gave up 41 points in the Super Bowl.
Yep. And yet, remarkably, even with special teams errors, they still had the ball down five, a chance to win it. And actually, it was Tom Brady who made a mistake.
Right. So, I mean, there have been Super Bowls where they've given up points. Even when they came back and beat Seattle when the pick was thrown by Russell Wilson, you know, Seattle scored a good number of points. So, I mean, there have been Super Bowls where the opponent against the Patriots has scored points.
Awesome stuff, Greg. Can't wait to hear your breakdown of the Super Bowl. We really appreciate you joining us and giving us what really happened last Sunday in both games. Thanks for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Appreciate it, Doug. Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. I told you yesterday, no Barry Bonds, no Roger Clemens, no, they don't belong in the Hall of Fame, and no, absolutely, positively not, does Alex Rodriguez belong in the Hall of Fame. Don't care if he works for Fox. I love his baseball knowledge, but he's not been rumored to. He's not in court documents. He was twice suspended by Major League Baseball. Twice. Two times over, suspended by Major League Baseball for PED use. So, no. No, not so much. Sorry, you gave up that route. You gave up that right by being suspended twice. And frankly, once was enough, but twice is like, really? Really? But here's the thing. Mariano Rivera is the first ever unanimous selection into the Baseball Hall of Fame. That was announced shortly after the show yesterday. And you see baseball writers and just regular columnists and radio hosts talk about how big idiots the baseball writers have been through the years, not having Willie Mays and Ken Griffey Jr. and others as unanimous inductees into the Hall of Fame. And somehow, Mariano Rivera getting in only points that out. That may be the most narrow-minded, moronic way of looking at it I've ever. Because they had a screwy deal for 50 years where they wouldn't put anyone in as a unanimous selection, somehow Mariano Rivera. What you should be exalting is they finally got it right, and they had the right guy to get it right with. Right? Like, look, Mariano Rivera, and he wasn't perfect, by the way. Arizona Diamondbacks, he blew the big save. Young Kim blew even more saves, but his team still won the World Series. But he blew it, right? He blew it against the Boston Red Sox. And never forget, they had a 3-0 lead, and Dave Roberts came in and stole second base, and they gave up a single, and the game changed, and the series changed. And, like, look, he wasn't perfect. But for the most pressure-packed position in the sport, in the most pressure-packed city in the country, maybe in the sports universe, he consistently delivered more often than not and did it with one pitch. And, oh, yeah, by the way, was a gentleman who did it in the height of the steroid era, surrounded by steroid-taking players, and he was never rumored to, nor did anybody actually believe that he participated in performance-enhancing drugs. When I'm told by people who test positive, everybody was doing it. Mariano Rivera wasn't doing it. So he did it clean when others did it dirty. He won when it counted in the toughest city to win in, and he did it with class and dignity. He's perfect. And because Willie Mays, like 30 years ago, should have got in unanimously, somehow this makes it. No! What you should say is, like, hey, baseball finally got it right.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, broadcasting live from the Farmers Insurance Open here in beautiful, sunny, breezy Dorey Pines, San Diego. Visit FarmersInsuranceOpen.com for tournament info. Join the conversation, hashtag FIO19.
We are farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
Quick question. Music, you got your microphone on?
I believe so.
Okay, here's just a question for you. How many golf tournaments did Tiger Woods win last year?
Win? I believe the answer to that would be one.
No, it couldn't be possible. Couldn't be possible that he won one golf tournament, could it? I'm actually impressed, super impressed that you nailed that one, although I shouldn't be. It's true, right?
It's almost like I'm a sports radio producer.
No, I know, but a lot of people would get caught up in it. Like, Tiger Woods only won one golf tournament last year.
Was not a major.
It was not a major, although he was in contention at a couple of different majors last year. But isn't it remarkable what a difference a year makes? Last year, around this time, Tiger Woods teed off in front of us, two groups in front of us, at the Pro-Am here at the Farmers Insurance Open. And there was hope that Tiger could be competitive. A year later, there's expectations that Tiger Woods will win a major. Now, look, I have long been a stockholder in Tiger Woods, Inc. I've often said this. You can't be too drunk to fish, and you can't be too old to play golf. You just can't. And this idea that because he's now in his 40s, he won't compete. We've seen Jack win a major in his 40s. And I do know that Tiger Woods created this group of young golfers kind of in his image and with his level of fitness. And so there are way more young players to go through than Jack had to go through when he's 40. And the technology, instead of evening the playing field for older players, you give that same technology to younger guys, and they hit it an absolute mile, and they obviously had the skill to dial it in. That said, there is something to there's this continuum in sports, right? You have athletic ability and athletic acumen. And, you know, right in the prime of your career, you have both firing on all cylinders. You have enough knowledge of the sport of time and score, in this case, you know, course and conditions and how to manage your temperament over a four-day period. You know, you've been through it enough. And now sometimes there's some battle wounds, some battle scars that cause some yips and will cost you a tournament or a bad bounce here or there. But you get towards the end, and while the athletic ability might not be there, the course knowledge, the acumen, we just saw from Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady is not, he's never been fast, but he's definitely not as fast at 41 as he was at 31. His arm strength isn't as good now as it used to be. But his knowledge of defenses, his recognition of what he sees and what to do with it, is off the charts. Now, look, it's going to reach the point, it's going to reach Peyton Manning level. Right? Peyton Manning was football genius at the end, but he couldn't throw a football. There's going to be a point where Tiger Woods physically can't keep up on many of these golf courses because he won't, but he's not at that point yet. And just like we're seeing in all professional sports, whether it's LeBron James being able to extend his career and extend his dominance maybe longer over more seasons than a Michael Jordan did. Obviously, it's different. He came out of high school and he didn't take the sabbatical for baseball. But still, you can play into your mid-30s. You have to change your game, but you can do it. But you're never too old to play golf. You're never too drunk to fish. But the expectations are just different. They're just different. And it's because he won one tournament. Yes, it's because he competed at majors, because he won one tournament. And it's changed the entire sport. Right? Think about it. Like, would you ever, man, I can't wait till golf, because Tiger Woods fit the last major, and they've changed the majors, obviously, this year, where the PGA is earlier. PGA, I believe, is in May this year. But Tiger Woods made it to him. I can't wait till I see golf again. That's amazing. And, of course, we'll see him here at the Farmers Insurance Open. Speaking of golf, a friend of the show and a guy who you should follow him on social media, because he's super into sports and into the conversation. Hunter Mahan joining us. He'll play here at the FIO 19. How much difference do you think the sport feels with Tiger now back in the discussion?
Well, it's extremely different, right? I mean, he's a unicorn in sports. I mean, he's changed golf dramatically when he came on the scene. Golf was in a good place. It was going well, but he brought a whole new crowd. He brought a whole new economy to the sport, and he was doing things on the course with his fist pumps and his reactions and his emotions that we've never seen. And then he was having these massive results that we've never seen, winning majors and tournaments and these huge bunches that we've never seen. I'll never forget that Curtis Strange interview he had. And Curtis was like trying to bring him down, saying, Tiger, top 10 is good. You know, making the cut some weeks, that's fine. And Tiger's like, well, no, my standard, I want to win every single week. He brought that attitude to the PGA Tour, and you see it now with a lot of these young guys that he's competing with.
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. Do our expectations too high considering his age and the battle wounds that he suffered?
It could be. I mean, if you expect him to be contending in every single major and he's going to finish, you know, 12th at worst in every single event, yeah, they're probably a little too high. But it was a great season last year. I don't think you could. I know he's only won once, but his ball striking stats were absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he returned to being a top five ball striker on tour, which to be great and to be continually great every single week, you have to do that. You have to be a great ball striker. I know people think it's just about putting, but if you don't hit it good, you're just not going to contend on here for week in and week out. I thought that was an incredible sign. I thought his opportunities in majors was really, really impressive. And I thought winning the Tour Championship the way he did on a golf course that is very challenging and really not suited for him. He didn't have a ton of success there. I mean, if he won it somewhere else, like Memorial or the Farmers, you would be like, well, that makes sense. He won there 8 times. So right. I thought it was really impressive last year.
No, I did too. Okay, so when golfers talk about Tiger, I've always been told, hey, greatest iron player in golf. Is that
100%. 100%.
Okay, so greatest iron player, and he fixed the chipping yips, and he had some of the putting yips as well. Like, that was a lot. Now, what about some of the things that have been overrated? Was like, he hasn't been good with the driver for a long time. What about his driving with his 3-wood and with his driver? Like, how was he actually hitting the ball last year?
I thought it was at times it was good enough, and at other times it was really good. His speed is really incredible for all the surgeries and everything he kind of went through. You didn't really know what kind of speed he was going to have, but he had a ton of power. Like I said, his putting kind of let him down last year. I think he wins 2 or 3 times if he just puts average. So that was a little surprising.
How hard is that to fix?
It's not hard. I mean, he's a great putter. I mean, he's made so many huge putts in his career. It's not hard to fix. Sometimes it's just speed. You just hit it 6 inches too hard, and you're just a little bit too soft some weeks. It was crazy. It wasn't great last year. I think it'll be much better this year. And if he keeps the driver on the golf course, I think he's going to win multiple times.
You know, it's funny. We talk golf now for, I don't know, what is this, 8 minutes. We haven't mentioned Brooks Koepka won a couple majors last year, right? And Brooks does to a golf course what Tiger used to do to a golf course. Like, he's playing a different sport because he's so ridiculous off the tee.
Him and Dustin are very similar in how they play. Very strong, very powerful. They can really overpower a golf course. And when they both drive it well, it is a huge competitive advantage when you're 20, 30 yards ahead of everybody. You know, analytically and statistically, when you're that far in front, you're hitting 9 irons and wedges. When guys are hitting 7, 6 irons, I mean, it's just huge over a length of 4 days. So he's a very powerful player. He's not afraid of big moments. He's never really out of any event that he competes in.
Okay, so what I've always – one of the reasons I've never sold my Tiger Woods stock is after the deal with Elon where he had the car accident and somehow the window got bashed out, whatever, right? He finished 4th at Augusta. Right, that very next time he played at Augusta, he finished fourth. Body was a mess. Mind was a mess. Still finished fourth at Augusta, which just shows me, like, dude, he could play that thing with a blindfold and finish somewhere in the top 10. And if he's dialed in, like, he's going to win at least one more time there. I just feel like it's a – what about the other majors? What sets up generally best for him?
Oh, I think Augusta for sure, obviously, right? But if he's hitting his irons well and he's doing everything that we think that he'll do this year, the British Open, he loves to play there. He gets so excited to play that style of golf, being creative. The only problem there is the greens are a little slow, and he does not like slow greens. We don't really necessarily love that. It's so different what we normally play every single week. But I would say that. But you got to remember the PGA this year is at Bethpage.
Yes,
and he is one there. He's been right there. I think that's a great golf course for him.
Isn't Bethpage like crazy long?
It is long, but you still got to hit it straight. And like I said, if you hit your irons well, you can play any golf course. And I think he can three wood it. I think the way he hits his three wood, as long as he hits it, he can dissect a golf course. For as long as he is, you see him in majors, he just kind of dissects them. Fairway, green, two putt, one putt. I'm going to take advantage of the par fives. He's really analytical on how he plays majors because he knows through the length of 4 days, if I just keep putting the ball in play, I'm going to be there on Sunday.
And then the Open's at Pebble, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
and that's and to say he doesn't like that.
He's had a couple good days at Pebble.
Yeah, and especially when you play Pebble in the summer, it is so different than the Pebble Beach Pro-Am early in the year. It's a completely different golf course.
How so?
Just so much firmer and faster. The greens are going to be, I mean, I don't say that twice as fast. That's ridiculous, but they're going to be much, much faster. He just knows how to play that place. He can just kind of put it from place to place and just kind of pick his spots and just be really aggressive on the par fives and take control of those. But, you know, some places you just step on the tee and you're just like, I enjoy playing here. I can see every shot that I need to hit.
Okay, there's three other guys I want to ask you about. You mentioned dissecting a golf course, fairways and greens. Wasn't that supposed to be Jordan Spieth? Okay,
yep.
Where is Jordan Spieth in this discussion?
I don't know. It was an oddly down year for him last year. His greatest strength to me is his mental toughness. He just battles and battles and continually battles out there. His ball striking was always great, and it just kind of left him for some reason. I'm not sure why, but nothing surprises me with him and his incredible grit. And when he gets that putter going, I think that kind of feels like it kind of fuels the rest of his game.
Okay, so we mentioned those two. What about Rory? Rory obviously is another guy that we thought, all right, he's going to dominate golf.
Well, I think it just shows you how tough golf is. And I know we see these guys at an early age and we're like, oh, my gosh, they're going to be unbelievable for 20 years. They're going to do exactly what Tiger did. And it just shows you what Tiger did was so incredible and it was so, you know, it was magical, and it was like you think, oh, everyone's going to do this. And it's just that the game is just too hard for that. Rory's – when he gets his driver going, it just looks like he walks different, and he just is so confident because he knows that's such a great weapon for him. You know, his putting kind of leaves him randomly, and it just – you just never know when it's going to come back. But he's a guy you never really want to count on a tournament, especially a tournament like this where I think we're driving and hitting the ball down the middle of the fairway with his length could be such an advantage.
Hunter Mahan, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. And then there's Ricky, right?
Yeah.
Who 2 years ago, right, won the Players' Championship.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, he's won a big one. All right, Ricky's going to do it.
Right.
He has the fandom.
Yeah.
He has the game. And we've seen him in, obviously, I know it's not a major, but it's kind of the fifth major. Does Ricky, does it feel like a breakthrough or is there's something missing there?
It's funny. Somebody on Twitter hit me up. Someone we know, I'll tell you, and he's like, I'm not sure about Ricky. What do you think? You know, does he have the focus? Is he too into other things and his clothes and his, you know? And I said, listen, he is so into golf, and I think he feels it's his time. I think this year is going to be a great year for him. I think his game is it seems like just keeps getting better and better and better every single year. He keeps putting himself in these big positions at Augusta last year. I mean, it was, boy, he came on like a freight train near the end there. He's not afraid of any moment. It's just hard to win those tournaments that we specifically focus on. It's just not easy to get your game, perfect at that right time. People talk about, you know, raising at the right time and being your very, very best. That's hard to do. We all want to do it, but it's very difficult to do. But he's you know, his game is shaping up to be pretty good, and I wouldn't be surprised if he wins, you know, three or four tournaments this year.
Most importantly, when will I be on your back?
Well, most importantly, I don't know. I'll have to talk to Dan about what happened today. But I got to say, it's great to have you on the Tom Brady is the GOAT fan club. We are so excited to have you. I didn't think it would ever happen. It took 9 trips to the Super Bowl. It's great to have you. I know Colin Coward is super, you know, he's the president of the Tom Brady fan club. So
yes.
It's great to have you aboard. We are so excited.
I mean, listen, between Brady and I'm hosting with Cowherd for Cowherd on Friday.
Okay.
So I know I have to lead with Brady or LeBron or both and then have to say something negative about Aaron Rodgers.
True.
At the exact same time.
And Russell Westbrook. You got to smear him a little bit or yeah. It wouldn't be a normal day.
I do actually agree. Russell Westbrook's jumper is broken, although he made 10 out of 12 free throws, made some threes last
night. Paul George is pretty good. He's been the surprise of the season for me.
And Paul George told us, hey, second year around Oklahoma City, I'm going to be more comfortable. Anyway, best of luck this weekend. Really appreciate you stopping by. Anytime you're in L.A., I know you got the West Coast swing. You're welcome to pop in the studio and co-host with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug.
All right. But we don't pay you for that co-host as well. put a little addendum in when we read that copy. That's Hunter Mahan. Make sure you follow him on Twitter.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.